From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis from the Korean Peninsula. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Korean Context. I'm your host, Jenna Gibson. After a relatively quiet August here in D.C., we have hit the ground running, and KEI has already hosted its first event for the fall. We are talking about trilateral cooperation between Korea, Japan, and the United States. We had two panels here earlier in the week. First one was talking about security cooperation, which is, of course, a very important topic that we talk about a lot. And we also had a panel on economic cooperation, which is what we're going to be talking about on the podcast here today. For this episode, we are joined by Shihoko Goto, who is one of the panelists during today's economic discussion. Shihoko is a senior Northeast Asia associate at the Woodrow Wilson Center's Asia program, where she is responsible for research, programming, and publications on Japan, South Korea, and Taiwan. So we're going to have a really interesting discussion today. We're going to be talking about a lot of different things related to the economic aspects of Japan-Korea-U.S. relations. And with that, let's get right into it. So I want to start us off kind of with a basic idea. Can you give us a general idea of what trilateral cooperation between U.S., Korea, Japan on the economic front looks like at the moment? So where are we starting off from right now?
Well, the three countries are tied strongly together economically, and especially on trade relations. Now, the United States and Korea have a bilateral trade agreement, CORUS. But Japan actually doesn't have a free trade agreement either with the United States or with Korea. One of the ways to strengthen economic ties between these three key countries is through trade, and especially by having a trade agreement that would involve all three of them. And I think that's the objective that we're all trying to work towards at the moment.
One of the things that we talked about a little bit earlier, but that was something I was wondering about, is when we talk about trade, when we talk about economics, there are a lot of organizations, there are a lot of agreements going on here. We have a lot of bilateral, multilateral, trilateral agreements in the international sphere, some of which, you know, one, two, or three of these three countries are involved in. So how do we cut through that, I guess? How do we improve the relations between these three particular countries in a realm where there are so many different organizations working together already?
Right. Well, the easiest and quickest answer is to say, get everyone into TPP and make sure TPP passes. And what are the hurdles for this? Well, first of all, Korea is not a founding member of the TPP. So once TPP is passed, both the United States and Japan, I believe, would want to have Korea join. Now, the other problem is, of course, that TPP is having considerable political opposition, especially in the United States. And we've talked about windows of opportunities for TPP to be passed. There's talk about, yes, it could be done by the end of this year during the lame duck session. Whether or not that actually does happen, the basic idea that TPP does bring these three countries together and it is in their mutual interest stands right. Now, there are other mechanisms. As you pointed out, there are many ways that trade relations are going on at the moment. And RCEP, the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership Agreement, is certainly one that Japan and Korea are looking on, and they're certainly hedging their risks if TPP does not go through. But the problem with this is that the United States is not party to it. And so, yes, it would strengthen Japan-Korea ties because it does give Tokyo and Seoul to have a framework to work with, but it doesn't necessarily involve Washington. How can you overcome that? That's always going to be a difficult issue.
Right. So during our discussion earlier, we were talking a little bit about the mind of the consumer here when it comes to trade. Mm-hmm. And some of the others on the panel had suggested that maybe there's some disconnect there, or there's not necessarily the mindset of Japanese consumers wanting to buy Korean products, and you disagreed with that. Right. And I thought it was a really interesting answer. So can you talk a little bit about that, about the mind of the Japanese consumer, and then also potentially the mind of the Korean consumer when it comes to these two countries?
I would say, like, maybe 20 years ago, people were very patriotic in their shopping experience. So there was this idea that if you were Japanese, you had to buy a Japanese car. You were an American, you had to buy an American car. And if you were Korean, you were so glad that there was an excellent car options from Korea, and you had to buy theirs. That kind of patriotic fervor in the car market, I think, has subsided on the consumer front. I think American consumers are very happy to drive a Toyota or a Hyundai as much as they are to drive a Chevy or a Ford. And that's true for Japanese consumers and Korean consumers as well. However, the reality is in the markets of Japan and Korea, Japan in particular, it is difficult for foreign manufacturers to get their products actually onto the road and into the hands of the consumers. Is there demand? Yes. Are there opportunities for car makers to make headway in Japan? Yes. But the rules are not in their favor. And again, this would be another reason why we would want to have a free trade agreement that would lower tariffs and make it easier for having products that consumers actually want, because there is really no limit as to what people want in terms of national branding. It doesn't really matter anymore for a globalized consumer.
So we spoke today a lot about all the shared values, all the shared, the reasons why US, Japan, Korea can and should work together. And we also spoke a little bit about vision, which I thought was a really good term for it, having a shared vision to take these commonalities and move forward. So I'm wondering, in your perspective, what does this vision look like in an ideal world? What should we be working towards, you know, with the exception of, you know, maybe a free trade agreement, but what, in a more, I guess, broad or a less concrete way, what is the vision that a trilateral cooperation between these two countries looks like?
I think there are two aspects to that question. One is, what are the shared values? And secondly, what are some of the common challenges that could bring them together? And in terms of the shared values, it's certainly about fairness, open markets, and those are issues that can be addressed by trade agreements to some extent. What cannot be addressed by trade agreements is trying to come up with solutions to common problems. We talked today about some of the common issues lingering on the horizon, or actually I should say looming over the horizon, because they are really in our faces, and it will be in our faces if we don't act collectively. There are issues like environmental concerns, especially air pollution, that require concerted cooperative efforts. No one country can deal with them, and it's in everyone's interest to make sure that pollution is not as dire an issue in East Asia as it is at the moment. And there are also opportunities to be had from a business perspective to meet the challenges of environmental concerns. Another big issue, of course, is dealing with the aging population. Both Japan and Korea are facing rapidly graying societies. Are there opportunities for cooperation insofar as perhaps robotics could be a solution to this? Are there ways to make infrastructure more friendly to older people? Are there ways for cooperation between the two governments to do that? Are there transportation solutions to make sure that old people are active and remain engaged in society? And these are solutions that everyone can actually work towards, and everyone can actually benefit from collective action.
All right. So when we talk about trilateral cooperation, or I guess when I read about that kind of thing online, what people are really talking about is, number one, security, usually. And number two, they're talking about it on a very government level or very high level. So a two-part question I get here, I guess, is, number one, how does that security aspect that really affects things on a day-to-day basis and the stability of the region, how does that affect the economic ties? And then number two, getting away from that government high-level discussion, where can we see these ties potentially between private entities? Are there any good examples of cooperation that we can draw on to increase ties between Japan, Korea, and the U.S.?
Right. Well, on the immediate threats, the immediate military threats, the most obvious is actually North Korea. We haven't actually seen any real direct correlation between North Korea's nuclear aspirations and the global financial markets. It hasn't really impacted investment patterns by either Korea or Japan. That said, we do know that tensions and a lack of trust between the governments of Seoul and Tokyo is a problem, and economic cooperation is seen as a solution, or at least part of a solution, to overcome some of those differences and actually dissipate some of those tensions. And so it's not really how do we try to have a framework of an existing economic cooperation. It's more about economic cooperations for political stability. And I turn to Europe as a very good example of that. So the lesson from World War II is that there are common interests between the former enemies of World War I and II. How can we make France and Germany in particular work more closely together? And in this case, it was over coal and cross-border relations regarding the development of natural resources between Germany and France. And that has led, as we know, to further economic integration and also to cooperation on the security front. But it really required a lot of trust on the side of these two countries, which went to war not once, but twice against each other. So in the case of Japan and Korea, there is bitter animosity on the two sides about historical interpretation and understanding. And another danger is that we are seeing a lot of a rise of nationalism and national identity in both countries. And there is a real risk of these nationalist, patriotic fervor being used for political gain. And in order to avoid that, or at least stave off some of those tensions, economic cooperation is seen as an opportunity. Now, are there values? Are there common challenges that they could work towards? I think one of the things that stands to mind is when it comes to what made both Japan and Korea successful, those patterns of success may not necessarily work in the future. And they face common challenges in ensuring that both countries remain economic dynamos. Both countries have a great educational system, but that can actually also backfire. The United States obviously does not have all the solutions. There are opportunities for trilateral cooperation on what kind of skill sets are required to succeed in the 21st century workplace. What kind of innovation is going to ensure that countries grow in the next 20, 50, 100 years? These are issues that really could benefit from dialogue on all three sides, and they would all find themselves on an equal footing because it's a common challenge. And no one has a single answer, and I think that answer changes. But engaging in dialogue, exchanging views, having forums are an integral part for moving forward.
Right, and then any businesses or any particular examples that you might be able to think of? Anything on the private sector?
I think robotics is one of those really exciting places because, well, one, it gets young people very excited. One of the exciting things about the Tokyo Olympics in 2020 is that they're probably going to do a robot Olympic, right? And that really inspires a new group of young people from all countries to work together, not work together, work against each other, compete against each other, and really get excited about how to come up with new ideas. And of course, that kind of intellectual stimulation leads to a lot of innovation as well. But that's not the only thing. It provides solutions to some really pressing concerns. The graying society, elderly people, both Japan and Korea are averse to opening up to immigrants. And whether that's a good thing or a bad thing is a topic for another day. But in light of the fact that there is a rapid decrease in young people and a huge rise in old people, someone's going to have to meet that gap in robotics, increased mechanization in all sorts of areas is going to be, will have to be, I think, part of that solution. And this will obviously be an opportunity for businesses to go in, and there will be opportunities for startups, cooperative startups. We're not talking about just big company and big company working together. And that's the final thing I want to add about that, is that both Japan and Korea have really dependent on the power of big business. And yet this innovation economy often starts off on a very small scale and scales up. And I think that really can benefit a great deal from people-to-people connections. They could work together to come up with amazing solutions to deal with elderly people being bedridden or what have you. And I think those are the kind of collaborative efforts that I would like to see.
So, of course, we could talk about this all day, and in fact, we kind of have been. But to wrap up, I just want to give you a chance if there's anything else that you wanted to say or anything else that you think is important for people to know.
Women. No one has the answer to this either. There are two big issues. One is having more women in positions of leadership and not just at the lower end of the labor market. And also, secondly, having a better work-life balance. And I think none of the three countries do a very good job. I think we could all benefit from looking at Sweden or one of the Scandinavian countries. But Japan and Korea in particular have a long way to go before they are in that upper ranking of gender equality. And I think it would be healthy competition for the two of them to compete to try to go up that index. I think it was the Davos Forum's index of Japan being just at 100 and Korea being about 5 points down from that. It's an embarrassment. They should both recognize that. And they can, that kind of healthy competition to go up is a good one.
Okay, great. We can end it there. Thank you so much for
your
insight and for being here today to talk to our audience.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us here on Korean Context. We have a lot of great guests lined up for the fall, so be sure to keep track of our podcast by subscribing on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts. And tune in again next week for another great episode.